Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid returned this week from a visit to China and said that he was impressed by their advances with clean energy. It wasn't as much about the environment, he added, as the economy. Can the U.S., can Ohio tap into that market? And could our clean energy policies make the difference? Joining us today to talk about that is former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. Governor Granholm is traveling the country to talk about how advancing clean energy policies, the ones that make our cars burn fuel cleaner and reduce the chemicals in industrial smokestacks, can also advance our economy. Welcome to the show, Governor.
I'm so glad to be on. Thank you so much.
In that in a commentary about those Harry Reid comments about clean energy development in China, the point was made that we're ignoring the fact that Chinese actually use very little clean energy themselves, that almost all their investment is in the development, not the consumption, and that the market there for solar water heaters, for example, would be non-existent without government subsidies. Is that what it would be come to here, a constant stream of government inducements to create markets?
Well,
or what are we talking about?
This is a really great question. Actually, China does have, like Ohio has, a commitment to renewable energy. They've got a goal of getting 20% of their energy from renewable sources by the year 2020. And you guys have a goal here in Ohio of 25 by 25. If you don't have a national market signal like that, that's sort of the basis of how you can get the job providers to come. So China has both sides. They've created a market by saying we're going to get ourselves 20% of our energy from renewable sources, and therefore we need those products. And they've also made it easy for companies to come there by offering them low-interest loans so that they can invest in the capital and equipment that they need to be able to take technology to scale. In the United States, we don't have a national policy that does either one of those. I know the president is pushing for it, but frankly, presidents since JFK have pushed for national energy policies. Now, the states have stepped up, but the problem with relying just on the states is that it's a patchwork. And so if I'm a business owner and I'm trying to decide whether to locate in the United States or in China, I'm going to say, wow, if I go to China, not only will I have access to their billions of people, but I will also be able to export to the United States. Absent a national policy, the United States is going to continue to see these jobs go to other countries that have made a commitment to renewable energy. China's number one in the world in terms of solar, wind, panel turbine production, et cetera. Number one in terms of private sector investment in clean energy jobs. And Germany is number two because of policy, not because of wages.
Where do we rank?
We rank number three. So we used to be number one. Like in 2008, the United States was number one in terms of attracting private sector clean energy investments. In 2009, China went ahead of us. In 2010, China and Germany went ahead of us. So we continue to drop in the ranking of the G20 countries in terms of being able to attract private sector investment. And, of course, that's where the jobs are. If the private sector is investing, they're building factories, they're investing in equipment, they're hiring people. So for us as a nation, there's a sense of urgency about this because every single day, business owners are making these decisions. This market is the mother of all markets. There's been a 630% growth in clean energy investment globally since 2004. And every day, we're missing out every single day. China's invested just last year $53 billion in clean energy, $54 billion in clean energy. That's what they were able to attract. Can you imagine that in the United States?
My guest is former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. We're talking about clean energy policy in the United States, or the lack thereof, I suppose. If you have a question or comment for the governor, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Governor, the president called this our Sputnik moment in his State of the Union address when he called for increased funding for high-tech research, including the green energy category. Do you think Americans can bring that same spirit to this as they did outer space? Is the environment sexy enough to generate that sort of excitement?
You know what's sexy? Is creating jobs. You know what's sexy? Is finding a way to make us independent of foreign oil when people are paying $4 a gallon at the pump, sending $1 billion a day of our money out to countries that are experiencing enormous unrest and may not be aligned with us, certainly in the Middle East. To me, jobs, and gas prices. If you ask Americans right now what are the two biggest issues for them, everyday Americans, everyday Ohioans, they're going to say jobs and gas prices. Those two issues, this is a moment for the U.S. to step up and say, once and for all, we are serious about creating jobs in America.
But it always seems to be momentary. For instance, when the gas prices shoot up, we immediately see more people riding the buses, more people buying, you know, they don't have enough Priuses to satisfy the market, particularly since the earthquake in Japan. But then the prices go down again, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they pull back, and they start buying their big cars again, and they start driving to work again. You know, if you went through the gas shortage in the 70s, whoever thought that we'd be building giant, you know, recreational vehicles like we have been for the last 30 years. So it always seems momentary in the United States.
So it is true that we have experienced these cycles. But here's what's different, is that the jobs situation is not a cyclical situation. It is a structural change in our nation's economy. And Ohio and Michigan have seen this more than anywhere else in the country. The loss of these traditional manufacturing jobs that have moved to other countries because of globalization, that's what's different. This century has made us realize as a nation that we are not an island, that we are operating in a global economy. These other countries, they're not just sitting idly by. Hu Jintao, who's the chairman or the president of China, said when asked by President Bush, what keeps you up at night? And President Bush was thinking that he would say, oh, terrorism. What Hu Jintao said is that what keeps me up at night is creating 25 million jobs for my people. They understand the opportunity in the energy market to create jobs, and they are not sitting idly by. So what we have to get, or what Congress has to get in the United States, is that what worked for us in the 20th century is not going to work for us in a global economy when the world is flat. We have got to get in there and compete to build things here and create jobs for our people. And this, the opportunity for business and for economic growth is enormous.
You were recently appointed senior advisor to the Pew Clean Energy Program, and it's an arm of the Pew Charitable Trust. As you travel the country, you seem to be targeting policymakers, but haven't most of them made up their minds about this issue? I'm wondering, who are you shooting for? Who's against it? Whose minds are you trying to change?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people who have never had an opportunity to even vote on it. I mean, a lot of members of Congress changed over in this last go-round. This is a bipartisan national campaign. I'm leading it with former Senator John Warner, who's a Republican from Virginia. I'm a Democrat from Michigan. Our message is about jobs and energy security, energy independence. So we have an opportunity to educate new members of Congress, but also to identify best practices around the country. So one of the reasons why we're here in Ohio is that you all adopted your renewable energy strategy in 2008. And so we have a chance to look back and see what does the laboratory of the states reflect? Is there something we can learn? As a result of your changes that you have adopted, you guys were identified by Pew as the fourth best state in the country in terms of job creation in this clean energy economy. 35,000 people are working in this clean energy economy, and actually that was before they tallied the results of the renewable energy standard. Since then, there was another study that just came out about a month ago that evaluated all the companies that are doing business in Ohio in the wind and the solar arena. You now have 169 companies that are doing components, supply chain work for wind and solar that were not doing that work before. 9,000 people working for those 169 companies. So our point is that if we can use the states as an example of what can be done on a national level, how powerful is that? And that's really what democracy is all about, these laboratories of democracy, which are the states, to use their example across the country to get national policy.
Is there another component to this process where you'll be going to states that are resistant to change, that don't see a need for change on the score?
Well, we're going to identify the states where there are good examples and where the business community can help to make this case. And so it may be a state that doesn't have necessarily an energy policy but has a strong business community that are eager to help make the case. Because really, the businesses are the ones who are saying, hey, We need a national policy here. I'm trying to make a decision about where I'm going to invest and locate. China is throwing money at me. China's got a national market. We need to make this decision. Otherwise, I'm going to go. They're rational players, business owners, right? And they realize they're playing in a global economy. So they're going to go where they can make the best deal for their shareholders. We have to make that good deal for them in the United States. And that's why we need national policy. So Pew has identified four pragmatic policies. We're not talking about big global comprehensive policies. We're not talking about cap and trade or carbon tax. Four pragmatic policies that have overwhelming bipartisan support. Can I say what they are?
Yes.
One, national renewable energy standard, saying that we are going to get, as a nation, 20% of our energy from renewable sources by the year 2025. It's even less than what you've already done in Ohio, but not every state, believe me, has a standard at all. Two, more fuel-efficient and electric vehicles to make us independent of foreign oil. The third policy is encouraging more industrial energy efficiency. A lot of factories right now have a lot of waste heat, capturing the heat and putting it back into powering the plant. Ohio is a total leader on this. You've got 48 facilities in Ohio that are doing this. It's called combined heat and power. That's the third policy. And the fourth is more investment in research and development related to clean energy. Probably not going to get that one this year because it costs money, but by 2015, we want to see a $15 billion commitment to renewable energy, clean energy investment so that we can really commercialize those technologies and keep them here in the United States with American workers.
We're talking about clean energy policy in the United States with former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and for as little as $60 per year, you can support our station and get some great benefits, too. As a member at our basic level, you'll receive a member card, a one-year subscription to Newsweek magazine, plus electronic versions of our airfare program guide and our e-newsletter. Visit WOSU.org and click Donate Now. And thanks for your support of 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Horizon Science and Noble Academies, providing college prep curriculum focusing on science and math. Information about Horizon and Noble Academies college acceptance rates is at horizoncolumbus.org.
The National Weather Service has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for Franklin County and surrounding counties. Expect showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Some storms will produce heavy rainfall and hail. And also showers and thunderstorms tonight, a low of 52 degrees. There's a chance of rain for Thursday, a high of 55. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. We're talking about renewable energy or clean energy or new energy or alternate energy policies, all of the above, whatever fits into your lexicon. Governor Granholm is traveling the country to talk about advancing clean energy policies as a part of her role as senior advisor to the Pew Clean Energy Program. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, we're on Facebook as well, and Twitter, too, at AnnFisherWOSU. We were talking about those four policies that have been identified to have the broad bipartisan support that you need. We talked about the national standards. I wanted to ask you, because the president wanted 80%.
Right.
Electricity from clean energy by 2035. Is that overshooting? Is that
No. Because what he's done is he's defined it a little bit more broadly. Either way, it's totally fine. I mean, Pew organization is focused on renewable traditional, so that's solar, wind, geothermal, hydropower. The president's defining clean energy broadly, so that would include natural gas, nuclear, so other forms of clean energy. Either way, it sends a signal to the market that the America is serious about building our own energy independence and clean energy independence. Let me just say one thing. You know, I talked about the broad support. 84% of Americans support national federal policy that encourages energy efficiency and renewable energy. Mm-hmm. 75% of Republicans support it. 63% of members of the Tea Party also support it. So there really is broad bipartisan support for a national energy policy. So why not?
So who's against it? If we're all for it, or most of us, who's against it?
I mean, there must be some who are against it, because if 84% support it, then there's 16% that have a problem. But the bottom line is the vast majority of citizens believe that this is an opportunity to create jobs and to not be so reliant on OPEC oil when they fill their tank. So the question is, for the new members of Congress and for the ones who've been around, instead of talking about things that often have gotten backlash, like cap and trade or all of that, let's break it down. Let's talk in these bite-sized policies that we know will have the impact of creating 3 million jobs in America if we get these done. So let's do it in that way instead and get bipartisan support for it. But it's one of the reasons why I appreciate the chance to come on here, because those who are listening, you know, you hire your members of Congress. They work for you. So if you believe that it would be important for America to build our own products, to not give up on the manufacturing sector, to create the Midwest be an opportunity to take all this technology and commercialize it and take it to scale, but have the Midwest lead the nation in building these products, then you should talk to your member of Congress about it. In fact, Senator Portman and Senator Brown both have supported, for example, and we would love for them to lead the effort to get more combined heat and power, industrial energy efficiency in the nation. That's terrific. It's a great example of bipartisan support. So let's just get it done. Everybody's focused on the debt and the deficit. I understand that, and it's very important. But I think they can do two things at once. So let's get this done as well.
Paul in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann, honored guest, Governor. There's something very lacking in our national discussion about this, and that would be that we need a national viewpoint on this. I'm asking you, Governor, to describe Germany, which is a largely unionized, a fairly coherent kind of country, which, as has been stated, is the second, you know, largest small country relative to the United States in terms of their development of the alternate uses of energy. One of the things that business absolutely needs is certainty.
Right.
If you're going to put $2 billion into a project, whatever it is, nuclear, or you're going to build aircraft carriers or skyscrapers or whatever, you want to know exactly what the outcome is from a regulatory standpoint. And we have nothing in this country. We give somebody 3 years worth of, you know, rebates or credits or something, mm-hmm. and it disappears, and then the next Congress you know, argues about abortion, and right. I'm just saying, please let us put a policy in force, and I will take your answer off the air.
You are awesome. That's exactly right. You
Thanks,
have
Paul.
Said it very very accurately, that when a nation has a national commitment to something, it happens. When they don't, then we end up being bystanders, passive sideliners to this question about where clean energy jobs are going to go. Germany is number two because they have national commitment. They've got 300,000 people in Germany working in clean energy right now. In fact, their clean energy sector is larger than their automotive sector, because they've made a commitment. They saw this as an opportunity to create jobs for their people. So we ought to be doing the same thing.
We need to create a lot more jobs in this country, though, to replace the ones we've
lost
over the last 25, 30 years, particularly in places like Michigan and Ohio. They were high-paying jobs. They were high-paying, kind of the backbone of the middle-class kinds of jobs. Will the clean energy industry replace those jobs with the same sorts of economic opportunity? And if they do, and if they can, and if they would, how would we compete with those countries around the world that offer cheaper labor?
Well, this opportunity, as John Doerr, who's this great venture capitalist, has said, this is the mother of all markets. And right now, there's by 2020, there's projected to be $2.3 trillion in private sector investment in clean energy. By 2030, 37 million jobs will be created in clean energy. The question is where? Where are those jobs going to be by 2030? They're not going to be in America if we don't have a national commitment to that policy. Other countries are so happy that we haven't done anything because they're getting their share of those jobs, and we are doing nothing. And so that's why we have got to step up. Will they replace all of the jobs at all of the same skill level? No. There clearly has to be, because a lot of this is advanced manufacturing, there will have to be a level of skill that's required. The community colleges will have to be training people. There'll have to be certification. But the opportunity is really there. We all know that the world has changed, that the jobs that require repetitive motion are gone and they're not coming back. But is that satisfactory to America to just say, well, they're gone and we're not going to create new markets for our people? It's not satisfactory. And if we sit by and say, we're not going to make anything in this country, then we become a fundamentally weak nation. The jobs that are created in clean energy are from $23,000 to $111,000 a year today. That's sort of the range. There are all kinds of jobs for all kinds of people. Shame on us if we don't step up and say we're going to get some of those.
Ken in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. The governor spoke of a number of jobs and a number of companies that are in the industry. My question is, there's been quite a bit of stimulus money and tax credits, government aid, if you will, to assist in providing for those jobs. My question is, how many of those jobs will be remaining when those funds are out, and what is the viability of those industries? There has to be a consumer on the other end of any product, whether it's electricity, and we're talking about cars, there has to be a consumer on the other to maintain that viability.
For sure. Great question. So on the nation decided during the Recovery Act that it was going to help supply some of these clean energy products by providing grants and stimulus dollars to get them into the United States. In Michigan, this is a quick example, we saw that the federal government was going to say, we need to create a battery industry for the electric vehicle, for example, and we want to have that industry be in the United States. Because right now, largely, it's in Asia. The battery industry can create enormous amounts of jobs. We, as a state in Michigan, added tax credits to those who got those federal grants, and we got 17 companies to come to Michigan to build the battery for the electric vehicle, the sort of ecosystem that goes into making that battery. Those 17 companies are projected to create 63,000 jobs over this decade. That's great. Those will be jobs in America. But the question that you ask is, will there be demand? And that's why having a renewable energy standard and demand has to be a component of it. So you have to address both the supply in providing access to capital to those businesses that want to be able to locate here, whether it's through low-interest loans that get paid back to the government or tax credits, on the one hand, like other countries are doing. And to create a market here, you have to have a renewable energy standard that says we are going to have a need for your product. So both sides have to be part of the equation. And all you have to do is look at the successes in some of the laboratories of democracy, these states, to see what could happen nationally if we did it on both sides.
Thank you, Ken. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about clean energy policy and the prospects of it for the nation with former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you'd like to join the conversation. And you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have some emails now. We'll get a couple comments and then a question from Tom, writes, the Dutch are leaders in this field, and it's helping their economy. One of the things that we're fighting against here is entrenched tradition. For example, we use corn for biofuel, and it's very inefficient for that purpose, and is a foreign oil-consuming crop. In Europe, they use sugar beets as an alternative, and it works much better. Much of the science exists, but we need to change to embrace the technologies.
Totally agree. The beautiful thing is in America, we've got so many ideas, and there's so much. I mean, I was just over at Ohio. I was just reading the information from Ohio State. They got some of the grant money from the Federal Department of Energy to take great ideas and commercialize them into biofuels. We've got all of this technology. We have all of this brains. But if we allow that technology just to be sucked away by other countries who are going to do it better, then shame on us. Again, it's our inability to act or our failure to act that has allowed this to go overseas. The question that you asked about tradition and about adherence to old ideology and old philosophy, we just have to realize that other countries have thrown sand into the engine of the free market. In other words, a hands-off old philosophy of do nothing and the market will take care of itself is not going to work in a global economy when our economic competitors are being aggressive about getting these jobs.
It's kind of like the Olympics in a way.
Exactly. It's exactly like the Olympics. We can sit by and do nothing, not train our athletes, not invest and make sure. And the other countries are so eager to be number one on the gold medal stand, and they're winning. So we can't assume that they're all going to sit by. They're going to take advantage of our weakness.
An email from George. The reality is that China is opening a new coal-fired power plant every 2 weeks. The vast majority of its manufacturing of alternate energy, such as solar panels, is for export, not for internal use, which was the point made at the top of the program.
Right. I mean, they're doing both. They do have a renewable energy standard that is going to require them to get 20% of their energy from renewable sources, but they have such a huge market that the opportunity there is enormous. They've identified 25 cities, for example, inside of China, who are going to lead their effort to move toward electrification of the vehicle. So they are, believe me, they are intervening. And yes, they're using a lot of energy. And now they are also importing oil. They used to be able to get their own oil needs from internal to China. Now they're growing so fast that they need more oil. What will that do to the markets? That means that there will be more pressure on global oil markets and prices will continue to rise. Another reason that we should become energy independent.
Matthew in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. Matthew.
Yeah, this is Matt. You mentioned earlier in regards to the event of renewable energy being the Olympics, and I think we're just had a couple of events like the 100-yard dash and maybe the 200-yard dash, but really we have to look at this as a decathlon, and when you look at how long Germany and Spain have been into this with their subsidies, which are or feed-in tariffs, which are quite high compared to what we're doing here with tax credits, Germany and Spain are actually advanced to the point that they realize that they can't afford to do feed-in tariffs forever, and they're actually scaling back. We're still scaling up. That's point one. Second point, President Obama talks about redistribution of income and they're a little bit of a class warfare concern. All these tax credits for renewable energy in the U.S., how many middle-class people and below benefit from those tax credits, and how many of the wealthy benefit from those tax credits? And I'd say 99.x% go to the very wealthiest 3%, which he continuously demonizes. Okay, thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Matt.
Well, so on the first point with respect to Spain and Germany, they have what is known as feed-in tariff, and they are reevaluating the level at that feed-in tariff. But the point that you're making about early technology is more expensive, the very early technology. But the price of, for example, wind turbines has dropped by 25% over the past 3 years. The battery for the electric vehicle is another example. It's sort of like Moore's Law with computers, that it continues to drop both in weight, in size, and in price, and in increase in density and increase in efficiency. So as I'm told that by 2015, between 2015 and 2020, the electric vehicle will be on par with the internal combustion engine. Once that happens, you should know that you'll be paying 2.5 cents per mile to drive with your electric vehicle. And today you pay 12.5 cents to mile if you are filling up your tank. So there's the my point is that the technology, as it's commercialized and as it advances, it comes down in price. That's true with wind. That's true with solar. At a point where we aren't going to need any subsidies for it at all. New technology does require some help with upfront capital, and that's why these other countries are helping their industry to get planted there. Because once they're planted, they're not going to move back.
What about the idea?
I see your point, and then rebuttal. I just offer one comment. I am in the glass industry. I sat in an industry meeting. The National Renewable Energy Lab came and presented to us, and they offered up the fact that when electricity costs 36 cents per kilowatt hour at your home, then the cost of renewable energy will equal that of coal-fired power, which they were going to regulate to increase the cost from a current 10 to 12 cents at the house to get to 36 cents per kilowatt hour at the house. They wanted to drive the cost of coal power up, and they wanted to take these subsidies and feed-in tariffs. But basically, they think the average consumer should pay 36 cents a kilowatt hour for electric power. How is that going to affect the middle class and down who have very small disposable incomes nowadays?
Well, let me just give you the example of Michigan, and that is that we did what Ohio did. We adopted a renewable energy standard, and we made sure that we got 10%, just a modest standard, 10% of our energy from renewable sources by 2015. And the Michigan Public Service Commission did an evaluation at the end of 2010 on what it did for prices, and it found it did not have any impact at all on energy prices. So the question is, we know that energy prices are going up regardless of what it is, but where do we want to get our feedstock from? Now, we could get it from coal, and clean coal is one opportunity, although that right now is very expensive. But again, if you invest in the technology, hopefully there can be breakthroughs there as well. But your feedstock for wind and for sun is free. So once it's installed, it's a free source of energy. And though you asked about who the tax credits would benefit, well, those people who get jobs building these products certainly will benefit from it. We want to make sure, and again, I'm not advocating for tax credits. I'm advocating for a renewable energy standard and more, I would say tax credits for industrial efficiency. But whatever way it is that we can get those manufacturers to locate in the United States and make sure that we create jobs here, that'll create economic opportunity for all kinds of people.
Thank you, Matt, for that call. We are talking about clean energy policies for the environment and for the economy with former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. We welcome your questions and comments, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. The next Fresh Air, how the Arab Spring remade President Obama's foreign policy. We talk with Ryan Lizza about his article in the current edition of The New Yorker. He's the magazine's Washington correspondent and traveled with Hillary Clinton to Cairo and Tunisia last month. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Celebrity chef, cookbook author, and cooking teacher Jacques Pepin joins a variety of local Columbus chefs to cook their signature dishes Saturday afternoon on WOSU-TV. Watch as the chefs demonstrate how to incorporate local foods into your cooking and give some useful food preparation tips and tricks. Tune in for this annual event when Jacques will be in the WOSU kitchen for Chefs in the City. Watch Chefs in the City Saturday afternoon at 1 on WOSU-TV. 73 degrees in downtown Columbus. Some light rain in the area, also pockets of heavy rain as showers and thunderstorms move through central Ohio. Some of those storms could be severe and produce some heavy rainfall and hail. The showers and thunderstorms continue off and on throughout the afternoon and into tonight, an overnight low of 52 degrees. There's a chance of rain for Thursday, cloudy skies and cooler with a high of 55. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is Jennifer Granholm. We're talking about clean energy policies for the environment and for the economy. Can they lead us to more jobs?
Yes.
Give us a call.
Oh, sorry. I don't mean to jump
that
in
would
on
be
you.
Governor Granholm. An email from Chris. I tried applying for a mechanical engineering position with a wind turbine company. It turned out they are sending design work to India. So how are engineers looking for work supposed to compete for these jobs of the future? Which gets back to my point is we come up with the ideas, mm-hmm. and we always have. Mm-hmm. There's never been a shortage of ideas in the United States, but we export the jobs.
Well, so here's the question for us as a nation, and anybody who has been involved in manufacturing knows this, that if we can come up with the ideas and we don't have policy, then the manufacturing is going to go elsewhere. But when the manufacturing goes, so does the engineering, because the engineers have to see how it's being produced, how it's coming off the line. You can't separate manufacturing from engineering. So on that emailer, I'm concerned about if they're going to India for the design work, will the manufacturing soon follow? And that, again, gets back to the point of, as a nation, we've got to make a commitment to the sector, because other countries are doing that very thing, and we're going to lose out. And it's not just about wages. Everybody assumes that it's all about wages. But as one of the emailers said earlier, you know, the kicker on this is that, you know, Germany's structure, wage structure, is the same as ours, so it's not just about wages. And if you look at, for example, a vehicle, labor is about 7% of the cost of a vehicle. So because of technology and automation, the amount of wages is a much more marginal cost than having national policy that provides for that business to be able to get their factory in the ground ready, quick, accessible through low-interest loans or access to capital and access to a market.
Marianne in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. First of all, I would like to say, Governor, how much I appreciate your frank and very intelligent discussion, and that some of the questions that I had have already sort of been answered, so I would like to comment on the ideological challenge that we have trying to change people's minds about, well, traditionally, we've always done it this way, and change is hard. I am originally from the Youngstown area, and so we've seen such a decline in the industrialization and jobs in that area. When you commented about the good things that are happening in Ohio, I didn't know that at all. I thought, yay, Ohio. How can we cheerlead for our state? It seems like we read about things that are always going wrong, and those are wonderful things and inspiring. How can we be better cheerleaders? And
well, look at you. See, you are now, by the power vested in me as the former governor of Michigan, you are now hereby charged to be a cheerleader for Ohio, and I never thought I would say that.
I know.
So you need to, I mean, you and anybody listening need to call your members of Congress and let them know that, yeah, did you know that because of Ohio's policy, we have 35,000 people in this state working in clean energy, and what we could do, how much more you could benefit if those businesses who are in Ohio had access to a national market. You could make Ohio this manufacturing hub for the nation, because the nation would be committed. So can you and all of those out there listening, can you let your member of Congress know that if you had a national renewable energy standard, or if you had a national commitment to combined heat and power to energy efficiency, you'd be creating all these jobs in America, you'd be helping the nation, and you'd be making us energy independent too. Ohio's example is a good one.
Terry in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann, for taking my call. And Governor, it's an honor to be able to ask you a question. You know, in general, is big oil the solution, or are they still sort of seen as the problem? And also the traditional utilities.
When you say big oil, who do you refer to?
BP, ExxonMobil, Chevron. Uh-huh. Are they out buying wind turbines and, you know, that sort of thing? Or are they stuck in the mud, if you will, on oil exploration?
Well, they're certainly doing a lot of oil exploration, and they certainly get the vast majority of their vast profits from oil. But recognize that they are operating on in a global economy, too. There is no free market when it comes to oil. And even if they're drilling off of the United States, it's not like that oil comes directly to benefit the U.S. They are on an international market. So I think helping to persuade or to use, instead of subsidizing the oil companies, what if we took those subsidies and used them to provide low-interest loans, which get paid back to the government, to provide access to capital to businesses who can make us independent of foreign oil and create jobs here in Ohio and in the United States? So, they certainly have blocked, I think, policy in the past, but maybe change comes hard, too. The opportunity for them to create biofuels is really very ripe. So why don't we encourage them to expand their portfolio, enlarge their pie, and move into biofuels, given all of the technology advantages they have?
So really the solution is the United States entrepreneurial spirit.
You need to call your members of Congress and let them know how important it is in the United States for us to have a national energy policy. And entrepreneurs will enormously benefit, and they'll be able to keep their great ideas and products in the U.S. But without a national policy, we will not be able to do so.
Thanks, Terry, for your call. We haven't mentioned yet the whole idea of global warming, the environment. I've mentioned it a couple times in and out, but you haven't mentioned it. How much does this have to do with the environment, or does that not sell?
Well, I'm coming from the state that has had the most challenged economy in the nation. The top of everybody's mind is jobs and gas prices. The beauty about this sector is that it can address both those issues, and for those who care about the environment and global warming, it can also address that. But my predominant focus is really on creating jobs in America, and I have a bias toward manufacturing jobs in America because I believe that we can do this as a nation and we're going to be weak without it.
Samuel and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to mention to everybody that probably one of the most promising home energy systems is called the Roof Mill, and it's manufactured here in Hilliard, Ohio, and we export to India.
Beautiful. Canada. What is the Roof Mill? What is it?
It's basically a wind-solar hybrid product for home energy.
Nice.
Creates grid-tied energy that can actually spin your meter backwards.
Oh yeah,
where do people learn about it? Give your web address, man.
Yeah, I don't have to. You can just Google roof mill. You'll see
all right
videos and everything you could look.
That
at.
That is great. And you've hired. There are Ohioans who are building this product, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it.
Absolutely. No, we're not a big government-sponsored company. We do benefit from the federal tax credit for 30%. You know, each system gets 30% back. The homeowner gets 30% of his investment back in a tax credit.
Let me ask you, as a business owner, would it benefit you to have access to a national market where the U.S. had made a commitment to getting 20% of our energy from renewable sources?
It would, yes, but, you know, as an inventor, I'm not waiting for the government or anybody else. I think that if my products will return on investment as the economy is, as the electrical prices are, without any regulation, and I think the stronger the products are and the stronger the business model, that, the math is there. There's places like Hawaii that are paying 27 to 50 cents a kilowatt hour for their energy. And, here in Ohio, we're paying probably 11 to 13 cents the same kilowatt hour.
I think when you can get the product to be at a market cost competitive with coal, then you have hit the sweet spot. And
I
wish you great luck in doing that and in selling lots of your product. And hopefully China's not listening and they're not going to come and poach you.
Well, I have patents. And actually, we are exporting to India for cellular towers to power the rapid expansion of cellular towers there with clean energy without, you know, so they can deploy them remotely without having to have a grid.
Good for you.
Electricity. One thing I would like to say is that what's missing with the whole picture more than, you know, more than government support of any kind is that we need a national grid tie net metering policy. And net metering is the way in which the utility company has to pay you back for your energy. For example, at my residence, if I generate more than I need today and it goes out my meter and the neighbor used it, AEP pays me 7 cents. You know, but they charge me 11 and 13 cents. So as a homeowner who's invested in a system and I'm generating green energy, you know, I'm not getting a fair shake from the Public Utility Commission. And then and the policy is different for every state. Like Colorado and New Jersey have really good policies, whereas, you know, Ohio is not very good.
But, okay. So it gets right back to the point, is that you need a national policy to allow people to become energy entrepreneurs so that you don't have to devise or educate a potential you know, citizen, a potential homeowner about what they can get or what they can't get. It would be a great thing if there were a national policy that allowed access to the grid so that people could generate their own energy, and if they generate more than they need, to sell it back and become an energy entrepreneur. It's a great point.
Samuel, what's the name of your company again? Or what should we Google?
It's Wind Energy 7. The invention is called the roof mill.
Roof mill. All right. Thanks for your call, Samuel.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Tom in Miami County, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I hear all your conversations about building solar and wind electric generation equipment, but you're missing something. The
what?
Jobs are all in the manufacturing of the equipment one time. It's a setup. In other words, originally you get it, you set it up, and then you've got the maintenance work from place to place. But you do not have the continuing supply jobs. For example, a coal-fired plant has coal miners, and it has trains bringing the coal to the power plant. You're missing that. There are no continuing jobs.
Sure there are. Sure there are. I mean, if you think about the huge opportunity of a market in America for wind, solar, geothermal, hydro, the market is every homeowner. You just heard the business who was just on. I mean, you need somebody that manufactures the roof mill. You need somebody to install the roof mill. You have to have the people who maintain the electric grid. After 20 years, you need a new roof mill. It's like a vehicle. You're going to have to replace at some point the systems that you have on. You've got big systems. You've got small systems. These are all kinds of jobs for all kinds of people. You need to have marketers, you need to have servicers, you need, it's a constant, you have to have people who know how to maintain the wind turbines or the solar panels on larger systems. So these are permanent jobs that will respond to an aggressive, to a big market and create a huge opportunity in America.
Thank you, Tom, for your call. Dave in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Dave.
This is Dave. Governor, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate these programs that they have. My subject is entrepreneurship and how to aid entrepreneurs in getting into these markets and companies. You talked about creating jobs, and it was mentioned before that the jobs may not be permanent. And I think that a lot of permanent jobs depend on having a successful company to give people those jobs.
Yep.
So really, by putting out credits or awards to encourage these things, we are doing it directly. The government is not directly creating jobs. If the government would aid someone like Battelle Institute or Ohio State here in Columbus, who are experts and who are doing a lot of work in this technology, to allow entrepreneurs to associate with them and actually start up small companies based on expert guidance of the possibilities, then the successful companies could be auctioned off by the government instead of retaining government ownership, either in an auction or by getting them public on a stock exchange and letting the public bid on the stock. So that an entrepreneur without a large capital investment available to him would be able to start this company with a good idea. And if they're too small to take public at first, they could be put into a consortium or a fund of similar companies that had been developed. And that fund could be sold to the public.
So
sort of like the concept of a mutual fund is now.
Right. So you guys have something like this in Ohio with this New Frontier?
New Frontier
Fund?
Yeah. I mean, Third Frontier.
Third Frontier. It's one example of a creative way that Ohio has tried to aid entrepreneurs. You've got incubators attached to universities to provide the infrastructure to get entrepreneurs going. And more of that, I think, is really critical. Taking great patents from the universities, taking them and teaching those who have the patents how to run their business, become an entrepreneur, introducing them to venture capitalists, perhaps matching venture capitalists with funds that would eventually get paid back to the government, creating a revolving fund to be able to do that. All of that are great ideas and great actions that Ohio has taken and other states have done as well. In Michigan, we did a similar thing. We securitized our tobacco settlement fund, and we created a $2 billion 10-year commitment to diversifying our economy. One of the areas was in clean energy, renewable energy. We ended up helping 2,400 companies get started. 1,500 companies get started in Michigan, 24,000 jobs be created from those small companies, but access to capital through encouraging venture capital and access to infrastructure help in encouraging entrepreneurs, giving them a business plan, getting them coaching, all very, very important as Ohio, Michigan, and other states diversify their economies.
Thank you, Dave, for that call. Governor Granholm, you're at work on a book with your husband, Daniel Mulhern, on the lessons Michigan's experience can offer to America. I hope that we can have another program with you about that when
Invite
that comes out
back.
In September.
Invite me back in September. I'd look forward to it.
If you want to learn more about this issue, we'll have a link to the Pew
Charitable Trusts
with more information about it on our website at wosu.org/allsides. And I want to thank the listeners for all your calls and emails today. And I also want to thank Governor Jennifer Granholm of Michigan.
It's been a delight. Thank you so much for having me on.
Former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm, she has been appointed senior advisor to the Pew Clean Energy Program. It's an arm of the Pew Charitable Trusts, and she's traveling the country. She joined us today. I thank you for joining us as well. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.